Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Doing Good Better on Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host, although I'm going to tell you about him, we don't know if he's going to be popping in or not. He's a man who truly embodies the spirit of this show, someone who doesn't just talk about making a positive difference in the world. He's out there doing it, and he's helping others. He's helping them do it even better than sometimes they've even imagined. Now, think about it. What better way to create lasting impact than empowering the incredible people who are already changing lives, helping them reach more hearts, more homes, and more hope? I'm talking about Steve Caliper, and he has built his life around that mission. He brings together those who give and those who serve, uniting nonprofit organizations with high-capacity families and generous investors who want to make their resources count for something greater. Now, with more than 20 years' experience building strategic partnerships across the private, public, and nonprofit sectors, Steve has developed a remarkable ability to bridge vision with impact, which is the same passion that inspired the title of his book. And it's also the mission of this show, which is Doing Good Better. Now, our guest today, I want to tell you a little bit about, because I take it as an honor, because we have the honor of talking with a man whose life mission is a bold combination of faith, family, and service while equipping leaders all over the world. And I want to tell you that one of the early guests that I had on this show back many, many years ago, that was his whole job, was equipping leaders and focusing on, in many cases, young people. Because the reality of it is that we can't do it alone, and we need leaders all over the world to continue to sort of take the mantle and run with it, because some of us can't do it forever. So anyway, let me tell you about Jim, because after 40 years of corporate sales, you know, Jim Dugan joined Dynamic Church Planting International as the advanced team director and the partnership director. Now, from helping earthquake victims in Haiti to teaching church in Kenya to climbing with goats at Royal Family Kids, Jim is making a positive difference in the world, and he's a beautiful example of doing good better. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Alan. It's just such a treat to be a part of this with you, and having it after Matt. And Steve and I have been friends for about 8 years, and we are, Dynamic Church Planting International is one of the ministries that Steve and his organization is making a big impact on.
The volume seemed to go down a little bit on the end of that.
That Steve has been a big impact on our organization, Dynamic Church Planting International.
All right. So, you know, as we get started then, and again, as I said, Steve may pop in, but, you know, it doesn't matter. We've got a lot to go over. So give our audience sort of a brief description of Dynamic Church Planting International and what their mission is.
Yeah, we've been around for about 30 years now. DCP, I've joined, as you just mentioned, Alan, I joined about 5 years ago after the COVID allowed me to go ahead and experience my dream for what my retirement would be. I got to do a little bit early, not too early, but a little bit early. DCPI, Dynamic Church Planting International, trains and equips church leaders all over the world. We've done that in 188 countries. Last year, we trained about 63,000 people. Overall, at that period, we've trained right at 600,000 people to be able to start the church that God has given them a vision for. We do that through other ministries. It's all done as a collaboration with other ministries. They're using our materials, or we're equipping them to use our materials to do that, training them, training the trainer model thought process. Mm-hmm. And all of that training is done by local volunteers. So through that, our vision is to equip enough church planters by 2033 to start 5 million churches, which sounds ridiculous, but when we put into perspective that we've been blessed so far at the 583,000 church leaders that we've trained through the end of 2024, to have that would equate to a little over 1.5 million churches already. It's been a blessing.
You know, Jim, I got to tell you, I've gone to different churches, and oftentimes we have trouble getting everybody to agree within one church. How do you get churches from all over the world to collaborate and really feed into this to where you can be training 60,000 people a year?
Well, one of the things is we're not trying to agree on everything. We're trying to collaborate. You just hit on two key words there. There's going to be some nuances that we're not going to, that as we're training one denomination, that they're going to be completely opposite in their theology, their thought processes compared to another denomination. We may be training exactly the same time or that we're working with. And the joy of that is to having one of those helping the other one, that mm-hmm. they're collaborating together. We had a, if we're agreeing on the core, mm-hmm. mission statement basically is the same mission statement as the Billy Graham Evangelism Organization. So it's a core belief in the Gospels. But we're not going to necessarily, all the groups we're working with are not going to necessarily agree on all the minutiae. But what we can agree on is that Jesus is our Christ. And Jesus is the one that we all need. And Jesus is the one that the people who don't know him need. And so how can we reach them? How can we do good better in terms of reaching those people? And that comes largely from a new church. A new local church is the greatest evangelism tool that's there. Now, we are committed to the core gospels, okay, of the gospel. We're committed to the core of the gospel. And so we're not asking or we're not collaborating with groups that are going to be way off that or they're going to be off that track of that. But it's more important that we're collaborating towards that end goal. And that's what we'll do. The way we do that is all through collaboration of the trainers, all being local trainers. They're all volunteer trainers. They're bishops or elders or pastors or denomination leaders for their denomination. They're working within their denomination, but they're also green, being willing to go ahead and help that next denomination over for them that may be working exactly in the same community, not as competition, not as silos, but as one body of Christ.
Well, as someone who has traveled the world, I have seen in many different countries, there's some pretty severe social issues going on in many different countries, and it's different in different places. How do you deal with the different social issues and still get everybody to come together and collaborate?
Isn't that the beautiful thought process that who does meet most of those needs? It's the body of Christ. It's church. And it does it better than any other organization. And I've had a chance, again, along with you, Alan, I've had a chance to not be in quite as many countries as you, but I've been in a few and from several different continents. And it's still the body of Christ that's the one that reaches out. And it's historically in America. It's been the church that started colleges. It's the church that started hospitals. It's the church that started food kitchens and fought slavery. It was the church, and it still is today all over the world. And so what we can do is that church is the one that's going to be able to meet those needs mm-hmm. and then meet it long-term and with consistency. And it's the church that does that. Now, there are great ministries that are focused on a specific need. And I'm an advocate for those ministries. I support some of those ministries financially and personally. I've been involved in those ministries. When I was blessed to be able to go ahead and look at this, when God did open my eyes to say, hey, I could start this part of my life and stage of my life and go into some kind of formal ministry, I expected that to be my retirement years, was to be working with one of those ministries where I'd spent most of my time. It was in orphan care. Orphan care around the world. Most of my short-term mission trips up to that point that we led were dealing with with an orphanage or with orphan care issues, vulnerable children and family issues. You alluded to Royal Family Kids Camp, which is we're one of 200 chapters around the world that put on a five-day camp for overnight camp for orphans, for America's orphans in this case, which we call foster kids, but it's America's orphans. So that's where most of my work had been done. Most of my ministry stuff, life had been. But what found, what hope it got opened my eyes to see is how do we go upstream? If the church is there and can help transform lives, those lives that are transformed are going to transform families.
Yep.
And that life that transforms a family, that family is not going to transform a community. And so we don't have, we're always going to have sin. People are involved. We're always going to have sin. We can't eradicate it completely. Yep. But what we can do is go upstream and start reducing it. And so as that life changes, they're not leaving their family and leaving an orphanage or an orphan.
Now, you brought up the point about as far as you envisioned yourself, because your heart drew you towards orphans and you envisioned yourself going in that particular direction. This interests me in the sense that, you know, my background, I've dealt a lot with addicts and with victims of sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. But I know that I have dear friends that have dealt with it from a medical standpoint, that mm-hmm. they go and they use their medical training to now go in. So talk a little bit about how someone that's maybe nearing retirement and how they can look at this and say, look, if your heart is to make a difference with poverty or with orphans, or if you yourself had had problems with addiction and you got through that, you want to help others with that. Talk about how people can get involved in whichever area seems to fit and where it's, where the message in their heart is, that's where I see me going.
Yeah. Jump. Jump.
Jump.
Jump. Jump in. Jump
Don't
in.
Wait. I like that.
You know, and do you have to be, you know, approaching retirement to jump in? I hope not.
No, that's a great point. That's a great point.
You know, this is pretty much where my life was as business as ministry for 40 years before I got a chance to be able to do this formally. You know, that's really the only difference. Now, instead of having part of my day is also focused on making sure I'm being profitable for the company I work for and the industry I was working in. But it was still about having a time to be able to talk with somebody. I was a regional sales manager. So my role would be to travel into an area, get into a car with a local rep that was a rep agency, travel with him, go call on distributors and contractors and architects and engineers and those kinds of things. Well, eventually, in 8 hours in a car, you eventually get past sports and weather. And you can talk about life.
Yeah.
Not that I'm a hardcore, but you know, it's just as, just, you know, we're going to have a relationship. And the relationship ends up being, this is who I am. You know, where's that fit into your life? And you get the chance to have conversations about what's going on in their life, why they are not going to church, why they do go to church, and you know, whatever it is. So I can have that fellowship over golf. I can be identified as a golfer. Well, some people can be identified as a golfer. I cannot be identified as a golfer, or I can be identified as a Christian, and that my life is about Christianity. And so I get to enjoy, you know, where did you spend your vacation? Somebody's asking you, what's your summer like, schedule like? Well, I'm getting a chance to go to Haiti, and we're taking a group of 10 of us. So we're going to go to Haiti, and we're leading that group. And I'm excited about what we're going to do. And the orphanage that we've been working with for 5 or 8, 10 years and whatever time I was. And that's so now they've seen, well, wait a minute, I can do that too. Right. Now, it doesn't mean I still don't go have a nice dinner and we go on personal vacations too and those kinds of things too. But this is, you know, if this is my hobby, this is where my life is. This is my passion.
Now, you just mentioned Haiti, and in the introduction, I also mentioned Kenya. And I've been referring to all over the world, but more specifically, where are, you know, what countries, or if there's so many, how many, or what countries are you not in, then if it's most of them. But let's talk about where these churches are.
Yeah, we've worked in 188 countries now. I think I said 186 a while ago. That's the through 2024. 188 countries, probably in terms of we say somebody is actually active, we're working in a country, when at least two people have taken one of our training tracks and are applying the information on the training track towards starting churches and starting movements, and duplicating and multiplying. With that in mind. So that's 188. And depending on how you do the map, there's 206 to 210 countries. And so we've got about 20 left. And so it's the hard ones. Some of them are hard because politically, South Korea. Some of them are hard because it's a tiny island someplace and, you know, trying to find somebody who's there that we can communicate with and know, you know, short of somebody traveling there and just walking around on the streets, and which is not very efficient, you know, trying to find somebody that is looking that we can come alongside and help. We're probably at about in any given year over the last 5-10 years, we're probably in about 100 countries that we're receiving reports. Okay. And that's when we say how many people we've trained, it's actually the number of people that we actually get formal reports from of the trainees.
Well, let's talk about the security of this. And I attend what's called IRF, International Religious Freedom. And so I meet with a lot of people in countries that unfortunately, it's not safe. You know, it's right. Not safe for them. And so their churches are you know, in their home, and they're very, very careful that they're not followed, some of which end up getting jailed. Let's talk about the security of this. How is it that you're able to help them deal with some of the issues that are still in some of these countries?
We actually have a very interesting, and as you were asking that question, I'm trying to think how I can word this because of it's actually happening as we're speaking today. So I'm going to be a little bit vague about when I say these countries, okay?
I understand.
One of our World Zone leaders, there's 10 World Zone leaders, and one of our World Zone leader teams is presently doing a training for leaders from the countries, I think I can be broad enough on this one, say mostly from the STAN countries, the countries that end in STAN. And most of them I can't pronounce because I am from California. Speak a common language, which is Russian. But we were scheduled to train that group in Dubai, which was a common place that they all could get to with relative ease with visas and whatnot. Dubai actually stopped, not the country, but somebody in Dubai in that process stopped and said, we couldn't come. And so now we have about 30, I think it's about 30 leaders being trained that are all being trained in Russian because it's their common language, but it's being trained in another country in Southeast Asia. That is a country into itself that fights the battle of persecution. And that's the only way we could bring them all together. So they come together, and we've done it in a third country before, bringing leaders out of Iran, come to another country, get their training, and then go back to Iran. And again, 25 to 30 at a time. And the great, amazing thing about, one of the great, amazing things about that, Alan, is for most of these people that were coming to those trainings, we did three of those in the last year and a half or so. This is the first time they've had a chance to actually worship with other believers in a setting like that. They've got a small micro church that they're leading, a house church. They've got underground churches like you would have in China and North Africa. That we think those kinds of places we hear. They've got those happening, but to come together in a broad, open arena in a building and be able to have worship music, loud worship music, and pray together and worship together. It's the first time they've been able to do that because you have to come outside of the country. The other way we do it, we had a situation where early during COVID, we had our trainings available online through Academy. We call Academy. It's a cohort kind of training. We had a training that was happening. There were about 15 people on the training from 10 different countries. Three of them, a couple, a married couple and an individual, were from Iran. They were, one was in Germany and the couple was in another country that is a persecuted country. I'm not going to say the name. The ones in the persecuted country, he was professionally an interpreter. He had been kicked out of the country. His wife had to escape from the country. They were fiancés at the time, had to escape the country so they could meet in the next country and be able to get married. So while we were training, and he's taking the training for the first time, he was interpreting to the person in Germany. Then both of them came, translated the materials into Persian, Farsi, and took it back to Iran online, because they had networks going on in Iran. So they actually took it back to Iran that way.
Wow. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'd love for you to share some of the great success stories. I've heard some from you before. I know that there are an incredible amount of them, and which includes you bringing in a friend of yours that goes by the name of Red, I believe, and how Red helps you. So for everybody, stay with us. You're listening to or watching Doing Good Better on the Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practiced lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. We are speaking with Jim Dugan, and we are talking about church planting. So, Jim, share with us some of the success stories, because I know I've heard some of them, and it touches my heart, but I'd like you to share some so the audience can feel the same thing I do.
Yeah, you know, the most exciting thing for me, Alan, is that we are dealing with people all over the world that are using our materials. And from that, we get to be front row street and seat, rather, front row seat. Say that five times fast. And sometimes participants on the field with literally these heroes all over the world. And we get to see that God is having a revival right now. It's happening. And a good example, you brought up Kenya a second ago. A lot of my travel has been in Kenya over the last 3 years, and amazing place. South Africa as well. My bracelet is actually a Kenya flag that I wear all the time now. And so a group, Benjamin is the bishop over a group of about 10 churches now, about 2,000 people that are attending these different churches. Just planted another one just a few months ago, two in the last year and a half. They are in the western part of Kenya. Truly, the homes are with dirt floors, mud. You know, it's not a hut. It actually looks like a house, but the walls are made out of a type of mud, that kind of thing. And they're farmers to be able to sustain. And these little villages, these little towns, off the roads, off the major roads. But he's grown that to being now 2,000 churches, or 2,000 people, rather, attending about 10, 12 churches. We were training there the third time, I think we've trained there over the last 3 years. And he brought together a conglomerate of other congregations and other churches, about 170 pastors from different denominations, all coming together for that area of Kenya to be able to go ahead and build a network and train them and say, let's all grow the body of Christ, right? And we've done that. But as we were training in July, we did training with about 65 people on one of our modules called house church planting. So it's micro church planting and that quick, rapid multiplication that happens from that. The leaders there and the master trainers who are from the general area, from Western Kenya, one of them is a part of another conglomeration of this kind of churches, so about 150 churches in the major city in that area of Western Kenya called Eldoret. So we went one night to meet up with the board of this conglomeration of churches of different denominations to say, would you be interested in doing one of these trainings in Eldoret? This is all again in July, middle of July. They came, said yes, they were interested in doing it. They worked together over a month, put on a training event with 220 pastors coming from all kinds of different denominations in that major city to have a revival in that city with a goal and a vision of having a revival in that city. The training was very well received. It was called Healthy Church Dynamics. It helps churches to look at their systems, one of those systems being reproduction and multiplication and leadership. Out of that, everything's done by training trainers. So we had 30 people become certified trainers who can now use all of our materials to be able to go and train within their groups and outside. And from that, they did a second training the following week with one of our other essentials. And now they have a fourth training, really, being scheduled. I believe it's this week or next week that they're in another nearby city that will be about 120 to 150 people, they expect. And all of that is that multiplication.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was just going to say, you just mentioned the term multiplication. Explain how that works.
Yeah, it multiplicate. Our training is centered around 12 biblical principles. We are not saying here's the type of church you build, here's the process to do it in. What we're doing is coming alongside leaders and helping them answer the questions that they need to answer to take the vision God has given them for the church He wants them to plant, and turn that vision into a plan, and then that plan into an action. Generally, it's a 3-day course if we're doing it together in live, and it also can be done over a few weeks online. So the same set of questions work with any situation, that under the tree in Turkana, Kenya, or a community church in Nebraska or Europe, or a mega church in Southern California. It's the same set of systems. Apologize, we've got an automatic on the lighting here. I'm not moving enough to keep it alive. So that multiplication ends up becoming, multiplication is one of those 12 biblical principles. A church is not healthy if it's not multiplying. God told us in Genesis 1:28 and Genesis 9, 2 Timothy 2, multiply, go and multiply. And that's a part of our bodies. We think of our bodies. We have different systems in our bodies. Well, just as if our respiratory system is not working correctly, if our multiplication system or reproduction system is not working correctly, it's still messing up the body. You're not healthy. There's something that needs to be worked on. So how do we do that to make sure that that is a change of mindset, that we still have the evangelism mindset as well as the discipleship mindset when we have our churches? And that's one of the things we make sure that we're trying to put instill into any of the church leaders that we're working with. Through that, you end up having scenario like South Africa about 3 years ago. International Assemblies of God had 100 leaders that were great at children's ministry with no place to go to be able to serve. Actually, it was really the Royal Family Kids Camp, but that's another whole long-winded story. But they also were not meeting their goals on new church plants and multiplication and growth that they wanted to meet. So we looked at it and said, some of their leaders looked at it and said, what if we could help these people that are great with children's ministry, which is not very much interest to the church in a lot of places in Africa or America for that standpoint. That children's ministry is kind of, well, let's go get the kids out of the way so that we can do church. All right. The children of today are not the church of tomorrow. They're the church of today. They're the great evangelists. So let's help them to become that great evangelist today. Let's do church for kids. And let's make sure that we're serving kids. Not Sunday school, but church. So anyway, they needed help to be able to do that. So what we found is, okay, we've got these people. We've got about 100 people. Let's teach them how to plant churches in some of the rural communities. And then the leaders in these larger churches in the cities can be mentoring them. So we did the training that way for all of their leaders, all the corporate, all the regional and national leaders for the International Assemblies of God. In order to train them to be trainers, we needed to have about 7 people there.
Gotcha.
And of those 7 people, all of them were from different denominations. They were not from that denomination. And 3 of them were from South Africa, but they were continent level leaders from the Church of the Nazarene. They were coming and training the national leaders from the International Assemblies of God on how to grow their church in that whole country. That's the kind of development that can happen. And that we are always looking to not add numbers, not build one church to bigger. Let's multiply churches and have multiple churches going out and growing and reaching.
Well, when you start talking about kids, and one of the thoughts that comes to mind for me is, as far as success stories, let's talk about how it affects each one of them. In other words, you know, that, you know, we have all met, and I've been blessed with the fact that I've been able to attend a variety of different events. And I get the most benefit when I get a chance to talk to some of these kids that then talk about how their life has changed. You know, how the confidence that they have, the gratitude that they have. And I haven't even gotten a chance to chase goats with them like you have.
You know, the fun thing is that picture with the goats is actually in Vista, California. It's at a Royal Family Kids Camp. That's an opportunity that we get to have. And that's where Red comes in as well, by the way. He's the puppet that I get to that scares adults that kids love. That he gets to be, and I'm far from being a great ventriloquist, by the way. It's just that, that to be able to tell the story in a way that the audience will receive it. And that's a great way why church multiplication matters. So those churches we were talking about, South Africa, for these young leaders to build, but they all had the vision to build those with our magnet principle, which says you've got to be doing something for the community. The community needs, and I'm paraphrasing the principle, but basically you've got to make a splash in the community when you start that new church. And what is it that you're, what I word that to be is that that magnet is what is drawing the community to come and talk with you and to be involved with you. And that's in this, most of those places, it's children.
Okay. I couldn't agree more.
And then so we can do that.
I was going to say, when you have Red working with you, what are some of the things that the kids then come and tell you that has surprised you the most?
It's so overwhelming to have somebody come with their eyes pop open when they see that this Jesus is not some guy that must be a part of this organization, that Jesus is God. You know, you got an 8 or 9 or 10 year old that is, we keep talking about Jesus. And when we're at camp, we get questions like, you know, why are you here? How much do you get paid to be here? And of course, we're all taking vacation pay and everything else to be able to go there and be able to bring money to help it make it happen. Right. But then why don't you react to us the way that everybody else reacts to us? I'm pushing all the buttons and you're supposed to go act this way. And you don't do that. Well, we get to, you know, do you have any idea how much God's forgiven me for? And I get to be able to have some time with you to share that same Jesus with you. That, you know, how much could we ask for? And when we do that, you get the stories of the child who has been incredibly abused. And in the 80-20 rule, I mean, there's 10% of these kids that are all foster kids. They're all America's orphans. They've all been abused and neglected in some, or they've all gone through a trauma of some kind, even if it's a situation with great parents, but they're in a car accident. So now the kid's in the system. But most of them have gone through some serious trauma, some serious issues, neglect and abuse. And when we get to see them say, you mean that you would continue to just help me and love on me? And we're just getting them for a week. It's the foster parents and the adoptive parents that are the real heroes, that they get to see the changes in those kids when they're bringing them into Jesus's love, and they get to see that life for them.
Yeah, and a couple of stories that come to mind for me is the, in essence, one young person that came up and said, I thought I was supposed to fear God. And, you know, after meeting all of these people and stuff, I realized God loves me. And I thought, what an incredible statement coming from what was about a seven-year-old. You know, that to see that sort of turnaround is just phenomenal. And I know having dealt with a lot of at-risk youth and listened to them talk about the change in their life. You mentioned, you know, many of the kids have come from abusive backgrounds. It's just so horrific to listen to their stories. But to then, in my case, to meet them before they have gone anywhere outside of the home that was abusive, and then to see them at another time and have them talk about how their life has been turned around so much. They're out of the situation, and they are working with people that truly love them. It's just been phenomenal. It's a high that I can't even describe.
It absolutely is. And JC was at our as a 22-year-old college student working to go towards law school, 20-year-old actually, working to go towards law school, been in the system most of her life, very abusive situation in the background, things like that. Came, she's now a counselor for the kids. So she's volunteering at the camps. But in her schoolwork, she's also created now a nonprofit, a foundation, or an organization to be able to go ahead and provide guidance for the kids in the system to know what voice they have in the system. And, you know, again, taking that aspect of what she's planning to do with her career, her life, is to be in law so she can be a child advocate in the court systems. And being able to, as a college student, bringing people together, say, let's go serve these kids. And let's be able to give them the information that they don't have access to. They don't know where it is. They don't know where to find it. Let's go ahead. And we can do it from the standpoint of not only do we have the technical information, but we also have the life experience education.
Yeah. And, you know, describing someone like you just mentioned, and I always look at and I go, you know what, here are the true heroes. You know, these are the ones that learn so much from it. But then felt, okay, I now need to come up with a way that I can take everything that I've learned and share it with others to make the same positive difference. That's just incredible. And I love it. And I wish more people would see it that way. You know, if they would take it and say, okay, this isn't just a situation of people are going out and they're being preached to and stuff. No, they are taking an information that they are passing on, which now goes to your point about multiplication. That's how it grows.
It is. And so, you know, that same story for the adults. We're all big kids.
Wait a minute. I was trying to not let everybody know that.
I'm sorry. I meant us, not you. I mean us. We're all big kids. You know, we're all dealing with life's traumas, right?
And absolutely.
At some stage in that process, you know, as a 20, in my case, in my early mid-20s, I was failing at something. And I wasn't failing at a whole lot of things before that. I was doing pretty okay. And I was considered a good guy. And people liked, you know, who I was. And they would hire me for jobs and things like that because I was a pretty good guy. But I was a wreck inside. And I was doing stuff that was going to take me down a path that was going to be serious problems down the road. And Jesus came and, you know, somebody was willing to multiply and teach me that was a part of my life that had to be changed. And it was only going to work when Jesus was in my life. And I was blessed to be able to hear it, accept it, love it, learned almost immediately a great joy for the Bible. And just, again, all blessings given to me. I didn't go out and say, okay, now I need to go find somebody that can help me be the amazing love with the Bible. No, I was blessed to find somebody. And that's, now can we go share that with somebody else?
I love it. Okay, we're going to take another break. When we come back, a couple of things I want to touch on, which is, let's touch on the Great Commission a little bit and how people can get involved. And then let's talk a little bit about, I know you guys have a gala coming up, and I'd like you to share more information about that. So for everybody out there, you are listening to or watching Doing Good Better on the Answers Network. Having a teenager at risk who is going through a traumatic experience can be difficult on parents, siblings, and all who are working with that young person. No family should have to go through this process alone. Westshield Adolescent Services is here to ensure you don't have to. Many of the psychologists and psychiatrists we work with have spoken about the stress families go through. Not just the young person, but the parents, needing to get their child to a program where they can get the help they need. Westshield aims to lessen that stress. Every case goes through a thorough intake process with one of our knowledgeable, compassionate intake coordinators. We want to know the likes, the dislikes, and the fears of each child. This important information is taken into consideration when choosing the best suited team member for each individual teenager. Westshield agents come from all different walks of life, giving us a diverse group of team members to ensure a personalized, compassionate experience for every teenager. This allows us to make certain every young person we work with gets to the chosen program in the best possible state of mind. We contacted over 600 of the youth we've worked with in the past to see where they're at now. 97% of these individuals told us how much their lives had improved, that they had better relationships with their friends and families, had gone on to marry, have kids, and were now using the skills they learned in their program to raise their own children. Our role of transporting at-risk teenagers is a vital step in the process of ensuring a youth's ability to thrive in their new environment, and is a role we don't take lightly. The recovery process can be a long one, but like any journey, it started with a single step. And we're back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. We're talking with Jim Dugan. And so, Jim, when we went to break, I mentioned, let's talk a little bit about how does this relate to us playing a greater part in the Great Commission?
Well, it does go back to multiplication again a little bit as well, Alan. And it's a difference between multiplication and addition. I think we've all seen the tables where if I take just a humble beginnings with a penny and then double that penny, and then I double what? The two pennies, and I double the four pennies, I double the eight pennies, I double 16. And, 30 days, it's in the millions. But if I'm holding on and say, no, I just want to keep adding pennies, and I go from one to two, and two to three, and maybe two to four or five, and then I go from five to 10, and five to 12, and five to 13, at the end of the month, I'm at maybe 20. Mm-hmm. So 30. And so I can't, you've got to multiply. I can't hold on. This is not my church. This is God's church. And I need to make sure that I'm equipping and discipling in that church, not to grow great leaders for my church, but am I discipling those leaders to be so good, some of them, that they can't stay within my church? They've got to be released to go start their church. And can I do that just like I do with children, that I don't want my children living in my house for the rest of my life, their lives? I want them to be out there having their own families. Now, I still want to be grandpa because grandpa's the greatest role in the world. But I want to be moving and helping them to be multiplying families. And so now, in my case, there's three families that are out there multiplying, not just adding. So how do we do that? How do we disciple? How do we grow? How do we hold it open and give it away? And that's what we treat. That's what we teach in DCPI, Dynamic Church Planting International. That's one of the key components of what we're training. We are supposed to be evangelizing and we're supposed to be discipling. And the discipling should be being done to the point where there's some of those people that are being released. And how does that young person that's there get that missional mindset? And one of our trainings is designed around that. How do we get that missional mindset to say that I may stay in my course of life? I may change my course of life to say, I want to become a pastor. I want to start a church. I want to go do what I need to do to do that instead of being a doctor, engineer, contractor, nurse, whatever I wanted, you know, was thinking I was trying to become. But on the other hand, I may stay as a contractor, engineer, nurse, doctor.
Right.
But how can I be missional in being in that role? And that's what I talked earlier about being business ministry. How can my life be about that? And then within my congregation that I attend, how can I be a part of a team that's going to go out? I'm not the leader of the team. I'm not the pastor that's going to go out and become the pastor of the new congregation. But how can I be one of the members of the team that's willing to say, I'm going to go? And at the same point, the pastor that is pastoring the mother church, how can I have a mindset as a mother church pastor to say, I'm going to every few years, every 2 years, every 1 year, whatever that math is, I'm going to take 10% of my congregation, probably who are leaders in my congregation, that are making all my metrics work. They're making seats in the sanctuary. They're the ones that are giving and tithing. You know, they're the leaders that are helping out with the different ministries. I'm going to take 10% of those and say, go start another church, not another campus. Now, there's good things about having multiple campus churches with, you know, continuous life feed, but not another campus of my church. I'm going to help them to go start a new church. And because that new church will reach people that my church will never reach.
Well, and I was just going to say, it's going to be their vision. You know, that whoever that is will have their own vision.
We do that, Alan, if you don't mind. We do that internationally. We say we're going to go reach some unreached people group that has a different language, has a different social structure, and all that stuff than the ones we're used to, right? We're going to go reach that structure. And we do DCPI, we do that with the next culture over instead of somebody from America going.
Right.
So in a community that's, you know, 20 miles away instead of 2,000 miles away. But how about in America? I will never reach the skateboard culture. They have a completely different language than mine. They have a different kind of music than mine. They have a different lifestyle than mine. I'll never reach. That's a different people group.
Yep.
So no matter how great, if I was a pastor in a church, which I'm not, my church is never going to reach that culture. So we can help somebody who can reach that culture, move their church a block away from ours, and they will reach that culture. And they'll be at the end of 5 years, 60 to 80% of those people that are in that congregation in that new church will be people who were not attending a church when they started going to that church, but they will never come to my church. Because I don't speak the same language.
Well, a perfect example of that is Chuck Smith bringing in Lonnie Frisbee. You know, it's a great example.
For a time, it was when Lonnie was the catalyst that could change that interest, that
exactly.
Situation, right?
Yeah. Yep. We've only got just a couple more minutes, but I know you have a gala coming up, and I think it's later this month. Share with us when, where, and what can we expect to learn at the event, and how can people get involved? Is there, are there tickets? Can people donate? What website do they go to? How do we get the information?
Thanks a lot. So like most ministries, we do a lot of everything's done. We give away what we give away free, but it's not free. It costs a lot of money to do what we do. And so we are having our annual fundraising gala benefit banquet, if you will, the hidden churches around the world. Our 10 world zone leaders, again, all over the world, will be here for a meeting, and then we're capping off the end of that week with this gala on Friday, October 24th. It'll be in 5:30 to 8:30. in Carlsbad, California at the Crossing. You can go to DCPI, dcpi.org, Dynamic Church Planning International, dcpi.org, and put a comment in there or request in there to be able to, or my email. I don't know if you're putting this up on the board someplace, Alan, but jduggan@dcpi.org, and we'll be glad to get you. It's free, obviously, or we're not charging. It is a fundraiser for sure, but you know what? It's as much about spreading the awareness of what God's doing all over the world as it is bringing in dollars. Prayer is our principle number two. It's the power principle, and it's essential that we have prayer. And so our prayer partners are definitely as much, if not more important than our financial partners. And so it's about the awareness of what God is doing. And you'll be able to meet all 10 World Zone leaders that evening, have some one-on-one time with them, and hear some things that are happening to reach the churches that are tough to reach, reach the communities that are tough to reach. I should say not the churches, the communities that are tough to reach, to be able to get into places where it's tough to go. And all that, those kinds of things will be happening that night.
Well, Jim, thank you for coming on here. But more importantly, thank you for being someone who is out there doing good better.
Well, I'm blessed to have great people like y'all that we're getting to do it with. Thanks a lot, Alan. Thanks for giving us a chance.
All right. And for everybody out there, if you enjoyed this episode, make sure that you click the like button. If you're interested in seeing more content like this, make sure you subscribe. Check out our other shows. You can do it on our channel or on the answers.network website. And for everyone listening, be good human beings and keep striving to do good better.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.